ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ योगेन चित्तस्य पदेन वाचाम् मलम् शरीरस्य च वैद्यकेन योपाकरोत्तम् प्रवरम् मुनीनाम् पतञ्जलिम् प्राञ्जलिरानतोऽस्मि. ऐ बौ टु दि एमिनेंट् सेज् पतञ्जलि हू रिमूव्ड् दि इम्प्यूरिटीस् आफ् दि मैण्ड् थ्रू योग of speech through grammar and of the body through medicine. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all. Last week we discussed, at any given time, our mind is identified, filled with the thoughts, and we are identified with those thoughts. Those thoughts could be very good thoughts, beneficial thoughts, or injurious, harmful thoughts. By definition, beneficial means that which makes us pure and realize our true nature, and the opposite is injurious, however pleasant they may be as at present. Why is it even a happy thought, a happy experience? We must always remember, happy experience means happy thoughts. Unhappy experience means unhappy thoughts. There is no such thing as unhappy experience or happy experience. It all depends upon how we interpret things. The same event can be interpreted both as happy or unhappy depending upon what the circumstances. Two people apply for one job, one person gets it, another loses it. Is it a happy experience or unhappy experience? Event being the same depends upon how we interpret it. But from the Vedantic point of view, yoga point of view, that which leads us to permanent existence, permanent happiness, eternal existence, and infinite eternal happiness, that is really the only thing worth counting. So our mind is full of thoughts, including when we are in deep sleep. It is a mistake to think that in deep sleep there is no thought. There is one thought, and we are identified with that thought. What is that thought? I slept well, and I am refreshed, and I am very happy for that. Now, even that thought is also harmful. Any thought is harmful. Then what about when a person knows I am Brahman? Is that a thought? That's not a thought. That is one's own identity. So even the thought that I was happy, even that is because we are only looking, identifying ourselves with from the viewpoint of the body and mind. Who slept well? Did the Atman sleep well? Why does the Atman say, I was not very happy, I was tired, but after sleep, I am very happy? Does the Atman say that? It is only the thought, the mind, the body that feels the effect. So we also discussed that every thought is an effect, and every effect must have a cause. And there are five causes of any thought that fills our mind. We discussed that: right knowledge, wrong knowledge, verbal delusion, sleep. What is the last one? Memory. Now, how do we control these thoughts? What is, after all, yoga? Yoga is control of thoughts. Chitta, vritti, nirodha. Again and again we have to remember, control means only one meaning in our terms. What is that meaning? That we are not our thoughts. We have thoughts, there are thoughts, but I am not the thought. I am a witness of my thoughts. Just as we are all witnessing everything in this world, and we don't identify ourselves with them. But even though we are witnessing both our body and mind, unfortunately, we identify ourselves and say, this is me, this is mine, and that is the cause of bondage. So control in yogic terminology means not that we shouldn't have thoughts. You can have billion, billion thoughts. It doesn't really matter. Just as when we are watching a beautiful movie, we are moved. So we can watch, but we never identify ourselves. You will enjoy them. You see, there is a good scene, you enjoy it. If it is a tragic scene, you seem to suffer. But that's not the same thing as if the same thing happens in reality. So you enjoy it, you witness it, you enjoy it. That special experience of enjoying both comedy and tragedy without getting affected in real life is called aesthetic enjoyment. Like a beautiful picture. What do I mean by beautiful picture? Suppose a very good artist had depicted the sufferings of a very poor, suffering, ugly human being. You know that they can make such a picture. But the painter has painted so realistically. We say, how beautiful. The painting is not beautiful. The painting, the subject in the painting is not beautiful. But the way the painting is done is very beautiful. We enjoy it. We do not identify ourselves and say, oh, I suffer. How long do you suffer? You see the picture, and even though you are suffering, that suffering itself is a wonderful form of enjoyment. A beautiful movie, very tragic, all tragic circumstances in the movie. And your eyes are streaming tears. Unnecessarily also sometimes. And you are really feeling, but even you are enjoying how beautifully it is played, how beautifully they acted, how realistically they acted, etc. You enjoy, and the moment you come out, how beautifully done. I would like to see it a second time. This is the only instance where you buy second time a ticket, third time, and watch it and go on shedding tears and patting yourself. How compassionate I am. In true life it may not happen, but in cinema yes it happens. This is called aesthetic enjoyment, rasa svadana. A yogi is one who exactly can enjoy in the same. For him everything is a beautiful experience of enjoyment. There is a special word in Vedanta for it. It is called leela. Just imagine, leela doesn't mean only good things happen. We know it inside, but we should never mistake it. Leela means Sri Krishna is playing only with beautiful young women. That is not the only leela. You know, all these demons came and they were trying to kill him and they did a lot of damage to other people. That is also part of the leela. If there are not troublemakers, the drama will not be so highly enjoyable. There must be contrast. What does he mean? In this connection, let us also remember, once Sri Ramakrishna asked M, what is the attitude of Ishwara Chandra Vidyasagar? And M said, he had become a skeptic. Sri Ramakrishna asked why. He was born in a Brahmin family. He was so truthful, so compassionate. But why? Then, as you know, M narrated, Ishwara Chandra Vidyasagar happened to read in the books of history that Genghis Khan had killed 100,000 prisoners, mercilessly killed, according to him. And ever since, what was God doing at that time? Why didn't he come to his rescue? This was the reply M had given to Sri Ramakrishna. And Sri Ramakrishna remarks, that answer of Sri Ramakrishna, we should read 100 million billion times. What does he say? Is what can man understand the actions of God? Not exact words, something like that. Then he says, he adds that creation, preservation and destruction are his leelas, his playthings. Not only creation, not only maintenance, even destroying them. Every day we sing Srishti Sthiti Vinashanam Shakti Bhute Sanatani. But when it comes, when a pin pricks, oh Thakur, what are you doing? I might sleep, but you should not sleep. Suppose when you are sleeping, a pin pricks, your own pin. You forgot that. Sri Ramakrishna didn't put it there. It's your own pin. And somehow it pricked you. And immediately he said, oh Thakur, what are you doing? That means what? I sleep. I have a right to sleep, but you have no right to sleep. You should have cleaned all those things. And even if it is not done, when I am sleeping about to you are Sarvagna, you know everything. You should come and must have removed it. Otherwise, you don't deserve the title. You are an ocean of compassion, etc., etc. Leela includes both creation, preservation, and destruction. A yogi looks the whole play of this universe as a divine sport. But do not make the mistake. From our viewpoint, it is not leela. It is hard reality. It is hard reality. Every single day we hear, you know, someone was telling today's news in Pakistan, Taliban had bombed and killed. Some people died. Just imagine if that person were our father or mother or brother or husband or wife, what would be our state of mind? Or we had been injured severely, lost an eye or a leg or something like that. What would be our condition? And especially if we are devotees. See how God has to work very hard to keep his devotees. That's why he has so few devotees. Okay. So this is how for a yogi, he sees everything as a divine sport. How could he see that? He could see that because he knows this is not the ultimate reality. This is the key. Now you go to the seashore or a lake and constantly waves are coming, playing for some time, and then what happens? They disappear. Do you feel regret? Why don't you feel regret that a wave has come? Oh, it is dead. That's because you know that nothing happened to the wave really. In fact, good thing happened when it disappeared because it went back into its original nature. Only this vision comes only when a yogi truly realizes God, realizes the true nature of one's own self. That is the goal. Until that time, these thoughts trouble us. Sometimes they trouble us pleasantly. Sometimes they trouble us unpleasantly. Pleasant trouble and unpleasant trouble. This is what we discussed. 5 causes of the production of every single thought. Now, how to control them? What is the meaning of control? Just now we defined. Let there be thoughts. Let there not be thoughts. There are 2 states. Rather, I would say there are 3 states. When a yogi is in samadhi, there are absolutely no thoughts. When he is in deep sleep, there is a very subtle, single thought that I am in this state. And other than that, there are 2 states. What are those? Dream and waking state. During these 2 states, there are innumerable thoughts troubling us. Whatever be the states a yogi is in, if he is in samadhi, there is no problem. If he is in deep sleep, even then, there is no problem. But a yogi is never in deep sleep. We must be very clear about it. A yogi is neither in the waking state, nor in the dream state, nor in the deep sleep state. What does he feel? He says that when I am in samadhi, he doesn't say, we are saying it. When I experience body, mind, I am in one of these 3 states, waking, dream and dreamless. But when I am bereft of identity with these 2, body and mind, then I am myself. He doesn't say that. He knows that. Instinctively he knows that. Now that is called control. That is called yoga. How to achieve it? How long will it take? How should it be practiced? The answer is very simple. Let us recollect 2 important teachings. First is Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna asks, if you have read Gita, this control of the mind is as hard as catching hold of wind, controlling the wind. It is not possible. Then is there any way, Krishna? He gives categorical answer, exactly. What he says? Yes, it is true. Controlling the mind is very difficult, but there is a way. But it is abhyasa and vairagya. Repeated practice and complete dispassion. Oh, Sri Ramakrishna. Somebody asks, oh sir, I am unable to control my mind. Sri Ramakrishna says, why? There is something called abhyasa. And he gives an example. He once went to a circus. And there he saw an English woman. She was standing on a horseback. The horse was running at full speed around the track. And in between the tracks, there were rings hung from above. And whenever the horse passes underneath the rings, the English woman jumps through that rings and lands exactly on the horseback. Ramakrishna unfortunately witnessed this incident. And for the next 12 years, he goes on giving this example again and again and again. So somebody told, once you visit a circus, that is enough for 10 years to brainwash all the devotees. And that is true. What he said is very true. There is something called repeated practice. There is nothing which cannot be achieved with repeated practice. In this connection, there is a curious fact. How far it is true, I don't know. But I think it is true. I believe it is true. That if you want to sing a song perfectly, you should practice it 10,000 times. 10,000 times if you practice a song, then afterwards you can close your eyes, meaning you can close your mind also. The song will automatically come out. You see, 10,000 times if you do, practically it will take you half of your life, I believe. This is abhyasa, repeated practice. There should be both. There should be practice, there should be also dispassion. Without dispassion, practice is like a lame person. And without dispassion, a person is like a blind person. You know the analogy? There were two people, a blind man and a lame man. Lame man can walk, but can't see. Blind man can see but can't walk. Both of them want to go somewhere. What is the best way for both of them to fulfill their purpose? The blind man, he carries the lame man on his shoulders. And the lame man goes on showing the way. Abhyasa and vairagya. Repeated practice coupled with dispassion. If we separate these two and practice only one, then there will not be the result. So, abhyasa vairagya abhyam tinirodha. Their control means the control of the thoughts is by practice and non-attachment. Now, I am quoting from a most marvelous commentary by Vyasa on these Yoga Sutras. It is written, at any given time, our thoughts, which are compared to a river, flows both ways. What is the both ways? Kalyana for towards auspiciousness, and also its opposite, which is inauspiciousness. That is to say, klishta and aklishta. That which is the river is flowing in a beneficial way, and the river is also flowing in an injurious way. We can see this every day of our life. You know, when the crop, the harvest is about to come, the fields are needing water. When the river flows nicely, the water is very, very beneficial. But when there are floods, you know what happens? Harvests are wiped out totally. Power is wiped out. It is, we can hear the news, Sandy storm or whatever it is. So, the flow of our thoughts is compared to a river. And it is a beautiful analogy because a river continuously flows. When are we without thoughts? From birth to death, when are we without thoughts? In the waking state, mind is full of thoughts. In the dream state, mind is full of thoughts. In the deep sleep state, mind is having one thought, very subtle thought. That is the only time when we get rest. The mind gets rest. So the river of mind flows in both directions, towards good and towards evil. That which flows down the plane of discriminative knowledge, viveka, ending in the high ground of Kaivalya or liberation, leads unto good, while that which flows up to the plateau of cycles of rebirth, down the plane of non-discrimination, leads unto evil, is the commentary, Vyasa. That is to say, if our thought, stream of thoughts are flowing, say, towards God, then it is ultimately leads us towards liberation. Kaivalya means liberation in the yogic language. Otherwise, if it is either flowing towards God or it is flowing towards non-self, towards the worldly objects, which takes us further into bondage, strengthens our bondage. Among these, the flow towards sense objects is reduced by renunciation, and development of a habit of discrimination opens the floodgate of discriminative knowledge. The stopping of mental modifications is thus dependent upon both repeated practice and dispassion. What is dispassion and what is repeated practice? So it is said that usually our thoughts flow towards sense objects. But if they are not flowing towards gross sense objects, they flow towards subtle sense objects. Do you know what subtle sense objects are? You know, pride, jealousy, or intolerance, and thinking injury to others in an indirect way. This is called jealousy. If we are devotees, we are also having jealousy. Devotees are also having jealousy. Now, if we are having jealousy and we are devotees, a worldly person says, he doesn't think twice. Okay, I don't like that person. That person has more than what I have. But a religious, a spiritual person has a problem with that. He says, no, I don't. How can I be a spiritual person having jealousy? But if by nature some accident happens and something happens to the devotee, we feel very happy. I didn't do it, but what I desired, that happened automatically. How subtly this mind works. This is only one side, negative side. What is the positive side? We feel compassion. We feel like helping other people. We feel like renouncing our things so that we can help other people become better. In fact, we all of us do that automatically. A person who hesitates or who outright denies helping other people, when it comes towards their own children or brothers or sisters, that person does it automatically. Did you not notice? That is compassion. That is good. That is kindness. But that all that compassion, kindness, etc. is due to attachment, maya. It doesn't flow. That's why Sri Ramakrishna again says, there is something called maya, there is something called daya. Maya, daya. What is the difference? Daya is spiritual. It doesn't discriminate between one person and the other. Even if I don't like a person, but that person deserves something, I give it, I see that it is given to him. Abraham Lincoln, as an example, is a good illustration. You know what happened? Civil war was going on. And the opposite party, I think it was Lee, Robert Lee, if I remember correctly. And he was almost about to be captured. And everybody knows it. He was cornered. He can't fly. If only his governmental troops went and fought a little bit, they would have annihilated. The civil war would have come to an end. But the generals were lazy. They fought for many days. They were tired. And they let this opportunity slip away. What should be, or what would be your reaction if you were in the place of president? He was not talking about the generals. He was not even talking about Robert Lee. He was talking about the whole American nation would have been free from this evil of civil war. That very day it would have stopped. But these people, out of negligence or wrong thinking, they let the opportunity go. So he took up a paper severely condemning them. He wrote the letter. And then, what did he do? Someone asked, did you write such a letter? He said, yes. What did you do? I quietly put it in the waste paper basket. Someone asked him, why did you do that? He said, if I had been in their position, perhaps I would also have done. I don't know. Because they might not have done willfully. But they might have been tired. Okay, we can deal with this fellow 2-3 days later. But that fellow was in desperation. He slipped away. And the civil war continued for a quite number of years. Just imagine, we can learn a lot of lessons from history. Anyway, we need both good things also and evil things also. What do I mean by we need evil things? Evil teaches us great lessons. We can learn it from our own experience. We can also learn from other people's experience. Sometimes you look at how people are suffering because of their attachment. Simple example, how the other fellow is suffering from diabetes. Why did he get so much suffering so much from diabetes? Because he is a slave to eating sweets. We can see that all the time. What is the lesson I have to learn from here? That if I do not control myself, I will also be in the same position. So you see, we have to learn a lot of lessons, not only from good people, but also from worldly people. Sri Ramakrishna in fact gives this beautiful example. When does a man realize God? When does he realize God? Do you remember the answer? It is when three attractions are combined and directed towards God. What are those? The love of a chaste wife towards her husband, the love of a miser towards worldly objects, the love of a mother towards her only child. These are all worldly examples, how we are devoted. We already have the tremendous amount of attachment. Only then these attachments need to be redirected. Our struggle is not to destroy them. Our struggle is to redirect them towards what is called Kalyana Vahini, towards auspicious goal. The mind, to have non-attachment, must be clear, good and rational. Why should we practice? Because each action is like the pulsations quivering over the surface of the lake. The vibration dies out. And what is left? The samskaras, the impressions. When a large number of these impressions are left on the mind, they coalesce and become a habit. This is the commentary by Swami Vivekananda. It is said, habit is second nature. No, it is first nature also. And the whole nature of man, everything that we are, is the result of habit. That gives us consolation because if it is only habit, we can make and unmake it at any time. Okay, habit means it is something which we make. You know, if it is in somebody else is making me do, then it is not in my control. But if I am making it, then I can also change it. But unmaking means what? Changing it. You know what is spiritual life? Spiritual life is doing exactly the same worldly things, but with a spiritual outlook. You know, you serve your mother and father. All worldly people do it. But if you want to be spiritual, you can do the same thing. You serve. What is changed? Now this time, you don't look upon them as your father and mother. You look upon them as Divine Mother and God Himself. Shiva Gnane Jiva Shiva. Serving man, not man, but Shiva through man. That is the idea. So in spiritual life, nothing changes. What changes? Outlook changes. Our attitude changes. And that really requires tremendous amount of effort. So Swamiji is putting so beautifully, if it is a habit, we can make and unmake it. The impressions are left by these vibrations passing out of our mind, each one of them leaving its result. Every action that we do creates an impression. A sum total of these impressions is called a habit. And we are a bundle of habits. We are nothing but bundle of habits. Just look, I'll give you a small example. You know, some one of us are sitting like this. Why is it? It's because of habit. Somebody is sitting like this. Why is it? Because of everything is a habit. And you can see some people like this. Even if I am weeping also, they will only put on like this. It's the result of habit. Hey, we are nothing but an embodiment of, we call it in Sanskrit, samskaras. But in English language, you're a bundle of habits. How even our physical body is a bundle of habits. How we sleep. Have you noticed? Some people sleep on the back. Some people sleep on the side. Some people sleep on the stomach. Yeah, they don't get, some people sleep unless there is a teddy bear or a pillow. They can't sleep because that even adults, I found, you know, like children, they put their thumb there, chushi we call it. That same habit continues in different formations throughout our life. Some people can't sleep with light. Some people cannot sleep without light. Some people go to bed with some music playing. Some people, they need to drink a little bit. So, from morning till evening, from birth to death, it is a habit, habit and habit. So, Swamiji says, our character is the sum total of these marks. And according as some particular wave prevails, one takes that tone. If good prevails, one becomes good. If wildness, one becomes wicked. If joyfulness, one becomes happy. The only remedy for bad habits is counter habits. This is again Swamiji's own experience, and also Swamiji is taking the cue from Patanjali. In Patanjali's language, which we will come in future, is how do we change a habit? I mean, a bad habit into a good habit. Pratipaksha bhavana. What is our problem? Habit. In up here, in the intellect, we know what is right. We know what is good. We know what should be done, what should not be done. But our mind doesn't listen. You know, there is a song, Kejanare Kalikaman, Baman Hoye Durbe Shashi. A dwarf wants to catch hold of the moon. It's a very symbolic type of song. What it means is, we know that we are dwarfs, and yet we want to catch the moon. Is it possible? Yes, it is possible. How? Not by yourself, but by the grace, blessings of God, Guru, Sri Ramakrishna, Holy Mother, etc. It is quite possible. So, how can unhelpful, injurious habits can be changed into beneficial, kalyanavahini? How is it? Pratipaksha bhavana means just make opposite habits. If you are thinking and that thing, your thought is not good, then what is the way? The way is, I don't want to think this thought. I don't want to think this thought. That is not the way. What is the way? Think of the opposite. Think exactly of the opposite. Pratipaksha means opposite. Exact, diametrically opposite thought. This is the only way. Even you are depressed, and it is very common for us to be depressed, what should be the pratipaksha bhavana? What should be the opposite thought? Of great enthusiasm. Of great energy, anti-depression. So how can we do that? Go on doing things which will give you more happiness. It's wonderful. Sometimes devotees come and tell me, previously I used to do my japa meditation with great enthusiasm, now it is dead. And I say, I ask them, what do you enjoy? And he says, sometimes I watch movies and enjoy. He said, before going to meditation, watch a movie which makes you very happy. After that, go do meditation. It makes a difference. Because if you go with the idea, oh my God, now I have to meditate. What a thought. Be happy if you first fill your mind with happiness and then go and do something. Anything. That's why they say a good exercise. Eat something very nice you enjoy. And wait a little time, then go on. The depression thought, before it takes place, your meditation will be over. You see what I mean? You have a depressive thought. And suppose you are eating something very nice, you like, enjoy it. And that keeps the depression away for some time. Before it returns, you finish your meditation. You will be a better person for it. These are the practical hints. Swamiji is telling that all the bad habits that have left their impressions are to be controlled by good habits. Go on doing good, thinking holy thoughts continuously. That is the only way to suppress base impressions. Never say any man is hopeless, because he only represents a character, a bundle of habits, which can be checked by new and better ones. Character is repeated habits, and repeated habits alone can reform character. You know, Swamiji, when he went to the Parliament of Religions, How did he address people? How did he start his speech? Brothers and sisters of America. Is it just a conventional word? Or was he really saying that you are all really my brothers and sisters? How can a realized soul see anybody as a non-self? That is not possible. He sees everyone as God. Now, I remember suddenly this remembrance came. How a bad habit is to be encountered with a good habit. You know, Swamiji himself gives an example from his life. He said one day, once I was in Varanasi, and one day I was going to a temple, Durga temple, and there were huge broods of monkeys, and he was frightened. Then they started chasing him. He started running, and the more he was running, the more they were after him. Then an old monk who was passing that way, and whom the monkeys did not bother because they knew he was not frightened, he said, "Face the brood." Later on, many times he repeats that word, "Face the brood." And what did he do this time? He faced the monkeys, and then the moment he faced them, they ran away. It's a wonderful example. Previously, what was his habit? Whenever this kind of danger threatened him, he was apt to run away. But now this time, he took the advice of the old monk and he faced. The moment he faced, they ran away. And do you think in future, what would be his reaction whenever he encounters such things? He would always face the brood. And this is the only way. Face the brood is a very symbolic, significant word, brood. It doesn't mean only monkeys or something. It says to any difficulty in life, including spiritual difficulty. I am here. God is there. How can we meet? I meet God. Yes, you are here. But what does it mean? Face the brood. That means say, oh mind, okay, it will take a long time. Doesn't matter, but I will do it. Face the brood. Face the depression. Face the negative thoughts. Face everything. This is the only way. In fact, if Guru is gracious, what do you think you are going to do? You face the brood. He doesn't destroy the brood. He makes you face the brood. Rabindranath Tagore's beautiful song, "Where there are difficulties, do not shield me, protect me, but give me the courage to lift up my head." Beautiful song. That's what Swami Vivekananda is trying to tell us. So, how can we control our thoughts? To become yogi, we have to control our thoughts. And these thoughts are controllable only through repeated practice and dispassion, intense dispassion. And what is repeated practice? Abhyasa. He is giving a special, specific definition. Tatra sthitau yatnaha abhyasaha. And before that, I must give you this, those who know Sanskrit. How to control the thoughts. Abhyasa vairagyabhya tan nirodha. Tat means thoughts. Nirodha means absolute mastery, mastery over the thoughts. How is it to be achieved? Abhyasa vairagyabhyam. Dvandva samasa. Abhyasa vairagyabhyam. Abhyasa means repeated practice. Vairagya means intense dispassion. Without these two, it is not possible to control the thoughts. Now, the 13th aphorism says, what is practice? Tatra sthitau yatnaha abhyasaha. Tatra means keeping a particular aim in mind. As I want to control my mind. And you do not move from that position. Tatra sthitau. That means I want to be the master. I want to control my thoughts. It's not so easy. Every single thought tries to dislodge us. You try to say, I am a happy person. A yogi is a happy person. I am a happy. What is a happy fellow? You are the most unhappy fellow in this whole world. You can't even lift a small pin. And you are claiming yourself, this is the thought that comes. What do you have to say? Your own mind is putting all these obstructions. That thought should be, no, I have taken a vow in the name of God. I promised my guru, I will do my japa meditation every day. Initiation means what? Do you know what is initiation? One way of speaking, not its correct definition, you know, Mantra Diksha we call it. You can get the mantram from the books, from the internet. You search in the internet, you get all the mantras. But why take it from a guru? It's a kind of promise and say, my teacher, I promise you, I will follow what you instructed me to do. To take this vow is one of the meanings of Mantra Diksha. Another meaning also I gave. What is that? It's a new birth. When a Brahmin boy at the age of 8 or 12, he gets second birth, you know. When he gets the sacred thread, that's why he is called twice born. Every devotee who is initiated is also twice born. He promises his guru. And incidentally, every Brahmin boy who has been invested with sacred thread, later on he goes on putting this thread. You know, sacred thread is called sacred thread. Why is it called sacred thread? Because that thread is a bondage. He bound himself with that thread. But what is it with which he bound himself? It is a sacred vow. What is that sacred vow? I will become sacred. I will become spiritual. And there are, if you observe, three strands. The thread which the person wears has got three strands. Then multiples of three. It could be 9, it could be 27, etc. So what does these three strands mean? You know what it means? Body, speech and mind. I will control myself and strive to lead a spiritual life through the control of body, speech and mind. Bhagavad Gita explains what is called austerity, bodily austerity, austerity of speech and austerity of the mind. So I take a vow in front of God, my guru, that I will practice. How long? My whole life I will do that. It is, I bind myself. That is why always he is supposed to wear that as a reminder. I have taken a vow. You know, curiously, only those who observe swamis or pujaris, priests doing puja, special puja, especially when we do homa, etc. If you had noticed it, see, we take one special grass called darbha and make a ring, and then I wear it. What is that ring meant for? It is to remind me I have undertaken a sacred vow to perform this particular type of worship. You will notice every time anybody does it, he will do it. In fact, in the olden times, they used to wear either a brass ring or a silver ring. And that ring is not meant for ornamental purpose. It is meant to remind oneself. And in this connection, I will also remind, what does a man do when he gets married? What does he do? He gives a ring to his wife, future wife. That is, what is the significance? Have you ever wondered? It may be diamond ring, it may be any type of ring. But have you ever wondered why ring? And why not a car wheel? Because it's a constant reminder. You know, in the olden days, when another man looks at this woman, oh, she is married, so I should not run after her. And similarly, Hindu women, they wear something called Mangalya Sutra. What is the idea? The moment a man looks at a woman, Mangalya Sutra we call it, a sign of auspiciousness. That is why they will do everything to protect that. It is a simple thread. You know, when we'll marry, what do? A thread with turmeric. They tie round the neck of the woman, not ornament or anything. Later on, they will substitute it for an ornament, etc. What is the point? Point is, it is a reminder for her that I am taking a vow. I am devoted to this lady. And the husband also takes a vow. You know that 7 steps going around the fire? It is also a vow. We are bound, according to Hindus, not for one life, for the until we reach perfection. Then only freedom will be there. This is the sacred meaning. But you know, we have forgotten because nobody tells us. The ring is meant to ring something in our minds. What is it? That we are wedded to each other. We are bound to this. That same ring during Homa, during worship, one wears with a sacred mantra. Anyway, that is incidentally. Repeated practice. Go on practicing. And when that practice becomes steadfast, when the person cannot live without that practice, then he is established in the practice. Only then he can say. A simple example. Suppose a man is decided, I will get up 1 hour earlier, early morning. He is habituated, say, to get up at 7 o'clock. Now he wants to get up at 6 o'clock. And what does he do? He buys an alarm clock and puts the alarm at 6 o'clock. Every day he is putting. 50 years, he was waking up at 6 o'clock as soon as the alarm goes. And then the alarm also dies. One day it dies. So the day it died, he got up as usual at 7 o'clock. What does that show? His practice has not become a habit. Because habit is something wonderful. It's H-A-B-I-T. Remove H. What remains? A bit. Remove A. What remains? Bit. Remove B. What remains? It remains. It's so hard. When a practice becomes that kind of habit, then that part of worry on our part is over. Then we don't need to worry. Every day you will go. You will do meditation. Whether you enjoy it or not, you cannot do without it. In fact, you know, like, just imagine, a day you get up and deliberately you forget to brush your teeth. Do you feel happy? It has become a habit for us to take bath in the morning and to brush our teeth. And all those things have become habits, good habits, I would say. So this is how we have to go. Tatra sthitau yatnaha abhyasaha. To establish ourselves firmly in that particular habit, that is called repeated practice. Continuous struggle to keep the vrittis or mental modifications perfectly restrained is practice. What is practice? The attempt to restrain the mind in chitta form or to prevent its going out into waves. So this, there is a beautiful Sanskrit word for that. The continuity of the mind, devoid of all fluctuations, is called Prashanta Vahita. Now let me make it clear before we go further. We are talking about practice. What is practice? To keep the mind not running in various directions, but to run in one direction, and that too to run into the direction of God. To these two points. First, let the mind not break into various types of thoughts. Let there be one thought. And that thought also, not any thought, but it is a thought of God. And the struggle to make the mind so that it is without fluctuations, that is called abhyasa. There is a beautiful example given of meditation, dhyana. You know what is how dhyana is meditated? Like a flow of oil from one vessel into another vessel. Tailadharavat. That is the idea. Or Bhagavad Gita gives another example, you know. In a room where there is no wind, a lamp, a candle is burning. So what happens when wind blows? The candle goes, flickers here and there. But when there is no wind, what happens? It is absolutely rock steady. To keep the mind, the thought, flowing like that on one idea without any fluctuation, that is called meditation. And how difficult it is. Continuously struggling to restrain so that the mind doesn't have any fluctuation. But there will be thought. Thought will be there. It is only practice. But it will not go into one thought, doesn't lead into another thought. It will be only one thought. Continuously that thought goes on flowing. In Sanskrit is called Prashanta Vahita, like a beautifully calm river flowing. River very calmly flowing because there is no breeze, there is no wind, there are no storms, and there is nothing to make it break out into ripples. It is flowing very beautifully towards the ocean. This is another example. That's why river is given. Where does the river flow? It always flows into the ocean. And what is ocean? Scientifically, what is ocean? Ocean is the mother of every river. What happens? The sun raises through its rays the water of the ocean, and through the form of clouds, the sun makes them go some high places, and then he again lets the water down, and that water again flows, pure water. We are making so many attempts to make, to bring out good water from oceans. You know, so many countries do not have rivers, etc., Middle East, etc. God is doing that work for us all the time, free of cost. And what do? We put poison so that even we cannot touch that water. All the river, whether it is in India, here, unbearably, we discharge all the poisons there. And then what do? We pay money so that they, distill this water and then clean it and put it, and they charge heavily British gas, British water, for both getting the water and then taking out the water also, both ways the charges. Whereas God has been giving these things freely to us. We make so much of these things. So this is called Prashantavahita. It's a beautiful Sanskrit word. Prashanta means absolutely calm and unrippled flow. But where is it flowing? Towards this effort to make our mind flow calmly towards God or our goal is called Abhyasa. That is by definition. So a quotation is given from another Upanishad called Mundaka. This self is realized not by one who has no energy, not by one who is subject to delusion, nor by knowledge devoid of real renunciation, but when the wise man exerts himself with energy, knowledge and renunciation, his soul reaches the abode of Brahman. This is a beautiful thought. It must be done with energy, it must be done with knowledge, and it must be done with renunciation. This is the definition. Then we move on to the next. So, when does this habit practice? When can we say it has reached its culmination? Yes, I did develop this habit. When can we say? So, the 14th aphorism. Sa tu dirghakala nairantarya satkara asevito dridha bhumihi. Sa tu. But that means practice becomes dridha bhumi. It's absolutely unshakable habit. What is a habit? Even unconsciously, we behave according to that habit. Even unconsciously. When you are dreaming, are you doing it consciously or unconsciously? Suppose, you know, you dream somebody is coming and then beating you up, black and blue. You know, what happens? Who created that? And how did you create that? You go on thinking these thoughts when waking state, and you suppress them. But in dreams, they become very, very lively, as though that is reality. But nobody else, you know. Another example I give you is children, they have nightmares. When does one have nightmare? Daytime or nighttime? Nighttime. And why do the children have nightmares? Because just before going to sleep, what do? They read nightmarish books. And all the goblins, hobgoblins and all those things coming and trying to. And what do you think? A child's mind is filled with imagine. He thinks imagination is real. And when such a thing happens, what do you think? He vividly imagines. That's all. That's called nightmare. What did Swami Vivekananda, what type of sleep he used to have? Tell me, you are all devotees of Sri Ramakrishna. You read the life of Swami Vivekananda. You remember? Two things. He used to go to sleep, fall asleep, seeing a growing light. He used to merge himself in that. That is one. He used to have another type of nightmare. What was that? First, he used to think, I am a king. I can get whatever I want in this world. Even in that nightmare, he was the king. But that nightmare becomes a daymare. How? Is to say, I am a monk. Wandering monk. Wandering on the face of the earth. Totally dependent upon God. And that, with that thought, he used to go to sleep. What type of dreams we have? Just imagine. So if you have a bad dream, You just don't blame anybody else. But how to have good dreams? Can we have good dreams every single night? Yes. How can we have good dreams? Our whole day must be spent with good dreams, good imaginations, read good books, think good thoughts, meditate upon what we have heard, what we have read, Sri Ramakrishna's words, Swamiji's words, Holy Mother's words, contemplate their lives, divine sports. I told you many times one beautiful story. It is worth repeating. One devotee asked a Swami, how can I develop devotion to God? He said, very easy. Morning, you read stories of women being kidnapped. At noon, read the stories of gambling. At night, read the stories of stealing. The devotee was puzzled. I asked you a question, how to develop devotion. And you are advising me to read women being kidnapped and gambling and stealing. Whole day, every single day, morning, noon, and then night, you read these kind of stories. What did he mean? Morning you read Ramayana, story of Rama. Noon you read Mahabharata. And night you read Bhagavatam. If a man goes on reading those things, or you can substitute them, Bhagavad Gita or Sri Ramakrishna's life. Morning you read Great Master. Afternoon you read Swami Vivekananda. Night you read Holy Mother's Gospel or Sri Ramakrishna's Gospel. You will see that later on you will never have bad dreams at all. Every single day. Takes time. Don't come tomorrow, day after tomorrow and say, yesterday I read only these three things. I had very bad dreams. So this is what it is called. Sato dirghakala nairantarya satkara asevito dridhabhumihi. This practice becomes perfect. It becomes really wonderful practice when dirghakala means long time. Nairantarya, long time means many, many lives. Nairantarya means, it's a morning I do five minutes meditation. One cartoon is there, you know. One disciple goes to his guru and said, for the last 3 days, according to your advice, I meditated 2 minutes in the morning, 2 minutes in the evening, and I have not yet realized God. Life after life, we have to go on. You remember the parable of Sri Ramakrishna, two yogis sitting? That much of faith we must have. Even if I have to be reborn, as many times as there are leaves on this tree under which I am sitting, I am happily going to do it. Because that is what I really want to achieve. That determination will soon bring the results. So what is nairantarya means without a break. There should be no break. So long that there is a beautiful saying in Sanskrit. Asuptehe amritehe brahmachintanaya kalam nayet. Asuptehe means from the time we get up until the time we go to bed. We should think of Brahma. Then amritehe. Mriti means death. Until from birth, until we die. From the time we become aware what we should do, until we give up this body, until that time, kalam nayet, time should be spent. How? Brahma chintanaya, with the thoughts of God. It's a beautiful talk. We will discuss it in our future class. Satkara. Satkara means with great love, great reverence, great faith. Love, reverence and faith. That what Sri Ramakrishna said, what scriptures say, and what our elders say, it is absolutely true. I may not be experiencing that truth now, but it is true. If I continue, I am also going to experience the same truth for myself. I become liberated. This is most wonderful sutra, which we will discuss in our next class. The subject is going to get a little more tough in the next few classes, until it becomes easier later on. This is only because of the ground. Once we are grounded in these fundamentals understanding, then we can proceed very fast. But it's very enjoyable experience. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.